Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by Scale Up Consulting, helping FinTech startups create a scalable organization to support an ever-increasing demand. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Now, over to the show with Richard Doty, founder and host. Hey, what's up, everyone? Today on the show, we're super excited to have David Breer, Chief Gravity Defier at DBD International. That's an awesome title, the only title of its kind on this show. So prior to obviously launching and running DBT International, David's been an entrepreneur actually for all his life. He's now a best-selling author. He's published in countries throughout the world. He's also been on podcasts and blogs. He's very well known for branding. So we're really super, super excited to have you on the show today, David. How are you going?
Hey, man. Thanks so much, Richard, for having me. Appreciate it.
Cool. What I'd like to do at the start of the show is maybe go into the time machine, take a few steps back, and then give the listeners a bit of insights into you. And maybe we can start off with how you started out at DBD International and the motivation behind setting it all up.
Totally. Well, for those that don't know, I grew up in Brooklyn, Queens, in New York City, okay, and started my career in Manhattan, where I started to freelance and work on brands such as Revlon and Estee Lauder and doing work for Rolling Stone magazine and New York Times magazine and et cetera, et cetera. And so I started out as a designer, but I quickly started to really appreciate more of the tools than just design, right? Even though right at the tail end of college, I was actually planning on being an illustrator. And I made a conscious decision to be a designer because I didn't want to just, to me, it was like being an illustrator was kind of like, do I want to just be a musician in the band or do I want to actually compose and make sure that all the pieces come together and that it's really a great, everything works together. So that's the short snapshot of how I got into this.
And how has being a designer and an illustrator, obviously knowing the technical nuances behind that, how has that played a part in building up your world and your brand and also obviously DBD International?
Yeah. Well, it's definitely giving me judgment where others, it's very, very interesting to see, like, because I look at today and for those, and just to really give this all context, when I started in the industry, there were no computers. Okay. That means there was no social media. There were no software programs where you could do a perfect rectangle. You had to learn how to draw a perfect rectangle, draw a perfect circle, do design letter things by hand. So it was a very different world than it is today. And I only make that point because today people can go, oh, can I design that on Canva? And all these there are all these services out there that are very easy to use. But I look at them and I see their limitations. They're fine to help people who might need to do certain things. Will they service the highest brands, the highest and most highest quality brands in the world? No, they will not. You will not find Apple or Nike or Harley Davidson or Tesla. You won't find them going, oh, let's go to Canva to do our thing, right? So it's just like, so I have an eye for what tools will I use that are not going to result in me compromising, doing it to the easy do-it-yourself standard. That's a different standard than a professional standard. Yeah. So it's just having that judgment. There's a judgment factor. It's kind of like knowing what are great lyrics to a song versus lousy lyrics and what's a great copy for a message. So it's all the tools. I look at all the tools with a very seasoned eye. We'll put it that way.
I hear you. And tell me more about, you know, the problem you guys are solving at DB International and why you sort of set out to solve that problem a number of years ago, right?
Totally. Well, the basic thing is that every entrepreneur that I know, almost all of them suffer in one way or another with this particular little blind spot. And that is what I call the beautiful baby syndrome. They've put their heart and their soul into like this thing, and they've invested all this time and money and stuff into creating this product or service and perfecting it, doing this and doing that and blah, 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 blah. But yet all of a sudden it's like, then they say, isn't it great? Isn't it gorgeous? It's like they're showing their child, like in the little blanket, like it just came out of the womb. Right.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it ain't the prettiest baby I ever seen. That's generally where it's like you kind of lost me with the third eyeball and that fourth ear. You know, that's not the prettiest kid. And so they lack the impartiality. So what I bring to the table and what my company, DVD International, brings to the table is what I call passionate impartiality, right? I am passionate. I will look at something and I'll say, that's freaking amazing. That is absolutely outstanding. But that thing, that other part, that's shit. That's absolute shit. And that's going to dilute and take away from. So I have that passion, but yet I have the impartiality to call something what it is and to sift out. It's not all gorgeous because you made it. And in fact, some of it may suck. And maybe only this one corner is brilliant, but you're focusing on all the other stuff. So the problem that entrepreneurs have is they can't tell which droplets in the ocean are the ones that really are important and which are just whatever. We can dismiss those and it will make no difference to our brand. It adds no value to what we provide to the world. So I help them really come to grips with the reality of the situation, because the bottom line is not everything we do is equally important. Not everything we do is equally valid. It is equally transformative. It's like, wait a second, if I've got 50 things here and two of them are amazing and 48 are shit, why do we have 48 on the table? Let's get rid of those. Let's have the two where we just absolutely crush it and let's be known for that. And that, at least you have a foundation for a proper discussion. So that's really the problems that we solve.
And you talked about things not being, you know, 48 crap things on the table and two absolutely amazing things on the table. But how do you differentiate? What is good and what is like out there super awesome, great?
Well, I mean, part of it is you got to take an honest inventory of looking out there and going, okay, let's just frame it this way. Every industry, there's not a single industry where there is not competition.
Yeah.
There might be some that have a lot of competition, and there's also direct and indirect competition. And what I mean by that is, like, for example, what's the direct competition of Pepsi, Coca-Cola? What's the indirect competition for Pepsi? Coffee. And the only way that you can know that is if you actually are on the ground and you say, oh, let's look at these convenience stations where drivers, they pull their car over, they fill their tank for their vehicle, then they go inside to fill their tank, their bio tank, right? It's like, and either they're going to go with Pepsi or they're going to go with Coke or they're going to go with coffee. So you got your direct and your indirect. So the thing is, you got to look and go, okay, so there's noise right there. Well, you start to look at, let's say you look at an energy bar. Well, okay, well, shit, there's a hell of a lot of noise there. Or you look at stuff in the beauty space, hell of a lot of noise there. Look at stuff in weight loss, hell of a lot of noise there. You look at software solutions that are designed to increase productivity, hell of a lot of noise there. So you have to look at what is the noise level. And then you go, okay, we can't just, because you only have two options here. You're either adding to the noise or you're rising above the noise. Those are your only two options. There's no like, well, we're sort of hovering a little bit above the, no. If you're hovering, you're part of the noise, okay? Plain and simple. There's no in between. So that's where it comes into that. That's where it gets into that beautiful, you know, beautiful baby syndrome. It's like, isn't that baby, my baby? No, I've seen 75 other products or companies like this, and why should I care about yours? And if you cannot honestly, as an entrepreneur, answer that question, you got a problem. So that's where it gets into, like, you go, okay, what's the noise level? All right, well, we're making it faster to do this. We're making it easier to do this. We're making it smaller to do this. What are we doing? Are we making it more gorgeous? Instead of it being an ugly thing when in the office, is it now all of a sudden, wow, that's eye candy? It's like, holy shit, all of a sudden we've moved something that used to be merely a functional thing, and now it's part of office decor. And it's like, it looks amazing. So, I mean, we have to shift context. We have to know how to pivot, and we have to know where are we able to offer a value that is different and distinct.
And as part of this, as part of rising above the noise, in your words, is there, from an entrepreneur perspective or founder or CEO, is there a big shift in the way they view the world and ultimately their mindset and how they look at things and how they look at their product or service or even brand?
Oh, after we've worked with them?
Yeah.
Oh, it's freaking dramatic. It actually impacts their culture. It impacts not only how they're seen in the world outside, they're even seen all of a sudden, those inside the organization now have a totally like, oh, that's the business we're in. we thought we were making blah, 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 blah. And that is like one of the most common mistakes is like companies think, well, we make blank and fill in the blank. I don't care whether it's software, whether it's technology, whether it's food, whether it's supplement, whether it's product, service. It doesn't matter. B2B, B2C does not matter. We make blank is the biggest misstep. Nobody cares about what you or I make. What they care about is what is the transformation that happens as a result of the, what does this thing all of a sudden make possible that without it, it's not possible. And that changes. I mean, I have a client in Utah that's in a particular industry that has no sex appeal, no nothing, but every one of their competitors, they're all when they would be approached. And I'm talking about the kind of contracts are six-figure, seven-figure contracts. These are very large contracts. A lot of business is conducted, but every one of these companies in this space, they all answer, well, we do blank, like the activity that they're engaged in.
Yep.
And they all were doing that. So that means they're all the same noise. So we found an actual way of redefining what they actually did, our client. And they have so far to date, first of all, now every one of their employees is like, I'm never working for another company again because they all do just that thing as opposed to us. And we do this thing. And they've closed $2.3 million in the last 2 months. Okay. I mean, it's like just because it's changed the sales calls that used to be 10 minutes are now 45 minutes. And that's not because they're talking more, but it's because the way we framed it has now opened their eyes of their prospects to holy crap. We've never actually looked at this way before. So when you can have that kind of impact, and it came down to three words, man, three freaking words that changed the whole thing. So that's the thing that excites me. It's like, and I've done it in so many different, I've been doing this for 41 years and I've seen what impact. There's not a single industry it doesn't impact. So yeah, it impacts everyone's viewpoint, and it's not sugarcoating. It's not lipstick. It's not, oh, let's change a few words to make it sound different. No, let's look deeper and find what's the thing we're actually not looking at. What are we truly offering? It's a deeper dig. It's not a shallow dig at all.
And what does it look like? So you're digging down, you're looking at the actual offering or from a product or services point of view. When you come up, and you got to say to the public, like, this is us, this is what we do. Is it messaging? Is it design? Is it a mixture of both that gets people into you, entices people to you?
It's all of those things, but there's one point I want to really punch up. It's not looking deep internal into the organization. It's looking deep external into the actual, in the world out there. It's a very different approach. See, it's like most times the companies will go, oh, let's interview 50 employees in the company. I said, why the hell should I give a shit about them? Are they the audience? How are they going to know? They're inside the matrix. They don't even know. It's like, where are we going to make a difference? Where are we going to make an impact? That's going to be made out there. Let's look at the noise that's out there. It's not rising above the noise internal that we think that we're making internal. That's the problem. It's not having an internal. It's not looking out far enough is the problem. It's like going, okay, wait a second. You know, like, I mean, why was it that Nike was the first sneaker sports related company that didn't, prior to that, all they talked about was sneakers. And they showed someone just doing the thing. Nike introduced talking about the athletes, the people, from their viewpoint, their aspirations, their challenges, right? So it looked out into the world. And that's why they were able to come up with just do it that actually communicated as much to an 80-year-old as it did to a 15-year-old. How can you come out with a brand that can literally talk to people with a 65, 70 year gap as far as your demographic? Didn't make the demographic narrower, it made it wider because they found values that were shared by people. So the only way you can arrive at that destination is by looking outward, looking at all the noise out there. They didn't look at the competing companies. They didn't look at Puma, which is the brand at the time. They didn't look at Converse, which is the brand at the time. They didn't look at Keds, which was the brand at the time, and say, how do we do better than them? Bullshit. That's the wrong question. The right question is, wait, what are the values? What's happening in culture that people are getting out of shape that will actually inspire people, that people wrestle with every day? That's the thing. So you need to be looking outward where the noise is, not inward at the internal. Internal noise, who gives a shit? The internal noise is not the cause. The internal noise is the symptom. That's the difference. The external noise is part of the cause and where you can actually come to the solution.
And you've mentioned people a lot. People, look out, look at the people. And, you know, in the fintech world, we like to always talk about our product does this, and it's the best product. So what I'm hearing here is, yeah, the products are good, right? But what do the people want? What do the customers want? What are their problems? Talk to them, understand them, understand the broad and the deep problems within the industry, and then go out and communicate directly to them, right?
Because the bottom line is the pathway to our customer's door does not start at our front door. Mm. It starts at their front door. Their front door is where they have the aspirations, the challenges, the objectives, the problems. That's the stuff they care about. So the pathway to their front door does not start at ours. The pathway to their front door starts at theirs, with and them eventually walking and arriving at our front door, because we've taken the time to understand what are the things they give a shit about. What are the things they really give a damn about? What's the stuff that keeps them up at night? Yeah. Right. And so, I mean, I use every tool I can shamelessly. I use design. I use color. I use language. I use all of those things, but I use them with a specific objective in mind based on the values of the audience, not, oh, how can I flaunt my, how can I show the latest coolest, man, I've seen what trends are happening, dude. I'm going to bust some ass, man. I'm going to win some awards. Look, I've won over 320 awards. I don't enter competitions anymore. I don't give a shit. I've proved that. I don't care about that anymore. The thing that I care about that gets me excited is when I get a text that says, hey, David, we just closed another $300,000 deal. Thanks so much. Right? That's what gets me pumped. It's like when I get that kind of text. I mean, I have a client. There was someone who graduated from my masterclass, my brand invention masterclass based on my book, texts me about, now that's about 3.5 weeks now, texts me on a Thursday, David, we just hit a milestone in our company. And we just closed the largest deal in our history of our company, a $10 million deal. Thanks to you. By applying one thing we learned, one specific tool we learned from the masterclass. That's what gets me excited.
No, that's awesome. And I mean, maybe we can take that as an example. They closed the biggest deal in their company history. I mean, what is it that made them and maybe others in your sort of client base stand out from, well, rise above the noise and stand out and show people that actually they don't worry about the competition. It's us that you need to talk to. We're going to solve the problem. Yeah. What is the magic sauce that they're putting out there?
That specific client, you mean?
No, I'm just saying maybe that client or another client.
Well, the first thing is, I always like to bring things down to the most practical things that tend to get people like to almost skip. And that is pay freaking attention. Stop to listen. Stop to look. Stop to ask why. Why did they do that? Why did customers choose this? What did they seek? How come Polaroid or Kodak didn't become the leader in terms of the smartphone and cameras? Are you kidding me? Talk about like a punch in the gut. It's like, are you guys stupid? Any execs from Kodak or freaking Polaroid, you were freaking sleeping on the job. What the hell? And how come Blockbuster didn't do what Netflix did? And I'll tell you, Blockbuster, the reason they blew it, they were married to the wrong thing. They were married to their solution rather than their customer's aspiration and problem. See, their thing was, well, we have brick and mortar. We want brick and mortar stores. Well, and Netflix already said, hey, you want to buy it? I was like, no. Well, Netflix's history, Netflix started as a DVD by mail. Okay. Mm-hmm. But they were not stupid enough to go, if they were like, no, we're a DVD by mail company. And that's all that's the mistake. Like I talked about earlier. It's like, we are what we do. No, you're not. What you do does not define you. What you are serving, the problem you're serving should define you. So Netflix smartly was married to entertainment, providing entertainment. That gave them real clarity, but the ability to pivot. Hmm. Because what can happen is now, well, wait a second. Oh, all of a sudden when digital distribution started to happen, oh, okay, we're still serving why we came into existence. Good. And then with digital streaming, that's totally still fine with Netflix. And then even to the extent that Netflix now produces more original TV programming content than any company in the world, including Disney. So they didn't just stop at just being a distribution point. They even contributed to creating original content. So the thing with all that, and when you start seeing a company, how they distributed, like they, instead of doing what networks had done, networks were very, very, they thought they got complacent on the job as well. So it was like, what'd they do? They would drop stuff weekly, right? They would drop their episodes weekly and they would have their seasons. Well, what would happen? Netflix would drop an entire season, boom, right? And then all of a sudden we start hearing this term called binge watching. Oh, yeah. Where did that come? All of a sudden that became a cultural phenomenon. You could say binge watching anybody and they know what you're talking about. Well, who brought that into existence? Netflix. So when you have a company that impacts cultural trends, cultural habits, that's where it starts to go. So just looking, you do not want to be married to the wrong thing. That's the problem. You do not want to be married to your solution. That's the same thing as, don't we have a beautiful baby? No, your baby's butt ugly, okay? Your baby is freaking butt ugly. I'd like kind of like rethink this whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. You've spoken about babies lots today, but it's cool. And how does
it? When I mentioned it in prior things, people all go, oh, yeah. Because I think everybody has had the thing of like, you know, most babies are adorable. And occasionally you look at one, you go, you know, so if you see this, you know, everyone's had that moment where it's like, it's not the most, not the prettiest kid I've ever seen. You know, so it just seems something that everybody seems to be able to relate to. So I that's why I include it.
No, I like it. It's very good. And also, I mean, how does, you know, you've gone through a process, you sorted out a client, you've taken him into a new world, a new mindset. How does social also play an impact in getting the word out there, communicating to your audience, and also maybe understanding your audience and your target market?
Yeah. So social. So the bottom line is here's the one thing that people cannot overlook. Social media is simply a channel of communication.
Yeah.
It has no superpowers. Okay. It's like, did social media make Gary Vaynerchuk amazing? No. Gary Vaynerchuk made social media amazing. Okay, let's not lose sight of that, okay? So the thing is that it's a channel of communication. Are you putting stuff out there that is worthwhile? Are you putting stuff out there that is respecting the time? You're basically saying, hey, bam, here's a post, okay? Is it going to entertain me? Is it going to enlighten me? Is it going to educate me? Is it going to help me bust a myth? What's it going to do? What's the payoff? There's got to be a payoff. Either you're making me laugh or you're opening my eyes, opening my mind, opening my heart. What are you doing? And there's got to be that payoff. And so that's the thing with social media. Use it to amplify, which means you have to first have a signal worth amplifying. That's the part everyone misses. You got to have a signal. Yeah. It's like if all you have is... That's called static, for those who are unfamiliar with it. It's called white noise. If that's all you got, and that's all you're going to put onto social media, that's just going to be a louder version of that same static. It will not be smarter. It will not be more valuable. It will not be more amazing because you got or bought 40,000 views, right? It doesn't matter. What? So 40,000 people saw you go... Where's the value? So don't ignore the signal. So that's my view on social media.
And part of the whole social thing and getting your message out to a good message, let's say it is a good message. What is your view on building a community around that and taking that community into your black book and fostering it and then at a point in time, pushing it down that pipeline?
Yeah, absolutely. If you are providing value, if you're providing stuff, people will support you. People aren't going to support you because you're talented. Trust me, this is coming from a guy who was very, very talented in his freaking teens. I don't know if you can probably see a little bit of it, but that right there, like that's yeah. That's a painting of George Harrison. I have artwork throughout my office and all this kind of. And the bottom line is that I was always drunk. I had a lot of talent. I don't say had as in like I no longer had, but referencing it back then at a young age, I exhibited considerable talent. And I was like, I thought talent was going to take me all the way. And I only learned through business was like, No, that's part of it. Talent alone will fail. Talent will hustle, will win. But hustle, if it's a choice between hustle and talent, hustle will probably outperform talent. Because talent by itself, if it's not hustling, it's going to hope, it's going to rely on hopeful connections, being discovered, also feeling entitled. I've got good talent. Someone should recognize me eventually. That's not owning your talent. That's being gifted, which is a great thing. I love, trust me, I love talent. I love brilliance. I love someone who can take the ordinary and transform it into extraordinary. I love that more than anything. But if someone's got more hustle and you're not hustling well with the talent, you very likely are going to probably lose. But if you've got the talent and the hustle, bam. Now, that's a combo platter that you can freaking take to the bank.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you touched on a good point. I don't know if you know a person called Alex Ferguson. You might have heard of him. Man United, ex-Man United football manager. And I was watching, I mean, he just had some major head surgery a couple of years ago. He's just sort of come out of it. And anyway, he was speaking on a show a couple of nights ago, and he's talking about how he created Man United and how he developed teams. And he's talking about talent. He's talking about, okay, the talented guys, only the great talents like Cristiano Ronaldo and what have you, the only reason they went to a certain level, i.e. became the best footballers in the world, because they grafted. The other guys that weren't talented, maybe in your terms, the hustlers like Roy Keane and Steve Bruce, they were awful. But the reason they became successful is because they hustled. They worked hard. They worked their socks off. And they performed the best for Man United. So I can see similarities in what you're saying here.
Yeah, completely. Yeah.
And as fintech leaders are developing their products and their services as well, what advice would you give to them as they developing out their brand and thinking about just starting out on their brand journey, or at a point where they're scaling up and maybe even entering in new territories, like going into the US or going into Latin? How do you think a brand would help them move the needle?
Well, you've got to always be looking. I have a personal mantra, which is be your own worst enemy. And what I mean by that is you've got to go, okay, good. We've done this. Good. What is next? If we don't ask that question, someone else will, and they will then pull the rug from under us. So we have to be our own worst enemy. It's like, oh, we just achieved this milestone. We just introduced this great XYZ. We just disrupted the industry. Great. What's the next? Now, how do you now disrupt your disruption? Mm-hmm. How do you unsettle your incredible milestone? How do you top that? Because if you're not always looking at that next iteration, there will come a day, sooner or later, someone's going to come because you were like riding it high. Bam. All of a sudden you're like, holy shit. And the only reason that holy shit moment is attributed to one thing. You got complacent. You got comfortable. So you always want to be looking. And that applies whether you're looking in an industry or whether you're looking at expanding geographically. And if you know you're going to expand geographically, you know you're going to go, hey, here's our 1-year plan, but in 5 years, we expect to be here, 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 here. Well, good. Look at the here, 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 here now. Don't be so short-sighted that, again, isn't our baby beautiful? And now you bring, now all of a sudden you take your baby on your first trip on an airplane, go overseas, and you land and you go, holy shit, there's 1,000 babies that look just like ours. Damn it. Right? And so it's like, that's a problem. So anyway.
No, got it. It makes complete sense, right? You need to always, I like the phrase, if you're not growing, you're contracting. So you need to continuously grow, right?
Always, always.
And as you continue moving forward and what have you, what things are you doing right now what questions are you asking yourself or what factors are you considering as you yourself expand and grow out as you move forward?
Well, I mean, a lot of what I've talked about in this discussion, but basically it's like, okay, I always look at, is this going to move the dial? I'm always asking why, and I'm always asking why not. I'm always looking at, okay, great solution. Is that enough?
Yeah.
I never look at the factor of we're great, we're crushing it. I don't look at my client who said, hey, we just closed a $10 million deal, or the other who says, hey, we just sold $2.3 million worth of stuff, or the other who said, hey, just closed another $300,000 contract. I don't go, that's great. We're amazing. We're cool. Yeah. We're untouchable. Bullshit. The greatest of us, and I apply this to myself on a daily basis, Failure is an option. Failure is an option. And if that, someone thinks, oh, wow, that's a real bummer, man. That's really pessimistic. Bullshit, it's pessimistic. It's called, it is an option. If you think it's not, you are smoking something, right? And so the thing is that you've got to go, okay, failure is an option. I can miss that shot. I cannot, it's like, so not getting comfortable. And it just means that holding a high standard. Comfortable to me means lazy. We can't observe lazy. We can't go into like, okay, today's is going to be another, we're going the same motions. That's lazy. You can't think lazy. You can't plan lazy. You can't dream lazy. You can't look lazy. You can't analyze lazy. You can't strategize lazy. That's just doing stuff on yesterday's stuff. That's what I mean by lazy. The unlazy way to live and plan and do it. And so what I do about every day is, okay, what do I need to do now to fast forward into that future that I'm envisioning? Bam, close that gap, right? What do I need to do? Am I ramped up enough in my estimation of what I need to do, think, plan, be, do, have, the resources I need to do, the connections I need to make? What's the deal?
Oh, awesome, man. And I always like to ask my guests, as you are moving forward all the time, and as you also are always learning, what books or podcasts that could you recommend for the listeners that you think would be useful for the guys and girls that are scaling their businesses now?
Well, I would be remiss if I didn't tell them to actually, if they don't already have my book, Brand Invention.
Yeah.
What the hell are they thinking?
Yeah, it's awesome, by the way. I said to David before we started today, I said I've read it 3 times in the last 3 weeks. It's a really great book. It's awesome.
It's called Brand Intervention. And Damon, for those in the U.S., Damon John from Shark Tank wrote the foreword to it. Now, granted, I know you guys in the U.K., you're like, hey, man, we got Dragon's Den. It's fine. You got Dragon's Den. Whatever. I don't care about Dragon's Den. I like Shark Tank. I like Shark Tank better. The Dragon's Den guys, I sometimes want to slap them because they're a little bit dry. I've watched them. It's like, guys, lighten up, man. Wait, do you have a good time ever? I mean, come on, man.
Well, you know, the English. Come on. But hey,
I've got English friends. And you English guys, you have a ball. You're very mischievous. And you might have a dry demeanor. But the bottom line is you guys actually have a lot of fun. But this that thing of like, hey, well, you know, sort of the head. It's like, oh, come on, man. So anyway, but definitely grab Brand Intervention if you haven't, for sure. And as far as other ones, there were two that I actually grabbed recently that were, I think it's Dave Trott, I think. He's got some good stories, thought-provoking stories. And of late, because I was listening to a couple of podcasts, I'm not a big podcast listener, but I was listening to a couple of episodes from Simon Sinek. Most people will know him from Start With Why. He recently spoke with Brian Collins. Brian shares values that resonate with me a lot. And he has there's something on his company's website. It's a section called ideas. And this thing like 101 idea designer ideas or something like that, or design ideas. And it's actually quite good. It so parallels so much of my thinking and philosophy. And those are a couple little goodies that I've looked at. Trot is from your side of the world, yeah, right? He's a UK dude, a Brit.
Yeah.
Even though he went to school in the UK, I found he went to school at Pratt. That's where he went to college, cool, right? He had a scholarship. And I went to the School of Visual Arts in New York, you know? So, I mean, so our paths crossed, even though we never have met. We've just recently connected on LinkedIn. And so,
some good recommendations then. As you wrap up today, how can, other than getting your book and reading your book, which is a must, how can folk connect with you guys?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you can certainly go to risingabovethenoise.com. That's my website, Rising, R-I-S-I-N-G, risingabovethenoise.com. And you can certainly reach out to me on LinkedIn. I share a ridiculous amount of valuable content on LinkedIn. And, you know, there's the channels, you know, Instagram and YouTube, et cetera, et cetera. But between the website, you can certainly subscribe. We've got a free ebook that you can download there. But those are two places I would say certainly reach out. I occasionally drop on Clubhouse, get on there a little bit, but that's, you know, but that's like a conversation. It's like you're either in the room or you're not. And once it's over, you know, it's a very funny, funny kind of dynamic. But those are a couple places I would say, risingabovethenoise.com and certainly LinkedIn for sure. If any of your listeners are like, hey man, I'd love to reach out. Let me make one thing perfectly clear. If you're like, oh, I don't want to bug them, shyness is bullshit. Bug me. if you're interested in reaching out, reach the freak out, man. I mean, don't, you know, like, what is it? Oh, it's like bullshit. Bullshit. So reach.
Awesome. Okay. And yeah, that's how I reached out to you, although I got an intro from Joe as well. But listen, David, it's been amazing having you on the show today. I've loved every minute of it and looking forward to getting this out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Totally my pleasure, man. Great questions, a great discussion. Some good nuggets are there.